So thank you all for sticking with us here. I know we're standing between you and lunch, and I was really excited to follow Sherry, because I think in the context of creating supportive linkages between community-based organizations and clinical partners, that we're really just starting to scratch the surface there, and there's a lot of learnings to uncover. So like Sean mentioned, my name is Kate Homan. I work for YMCA of the USA. It's the National Resource Office that supports all those Ys across the country. And we're a national network CTG grantee, so we then funded 10 of our affiliates in the field for this first cohort, and I'm going to be talking about their experience and lessons learned in creating these supportive linkages. So disclosure number one, I have no relationships to disclose, and these are the Y's conclusions and thoughts in that representative of the CDC. So at the end of the session, I hope you'll be able to explain the benefit of engaging in system change to develop these linkages, some of the be able to recall some of the system-level barriers that exist in creating them, and then identify some promising practices to overcome those barriers. I'm sorry, a community-based organization. So for the past 160 years, the Y has been working to strengthen communities, and we are able to do this mostly because of this great footprint we have across the country. So all these dots represent physical locations, but the work of the Y is actually beyond these brick and mortars and serving more than 20 million people per year in over 10,000 communities. And I think in the context of community transformation grants, it's important. It was important for us that we have many Ys who are located in majority Hispanic, Latino, and African American populations, especially as we're working to reduce those health inequities that we often see in these populations. So how the Y works to strengthen communities through three pillars. The first is youth development, social responsibility, and healthy living. And this work really falls under our healthy living portfolio, where we're looking to improve the nation's health and well-being. So we definitely borrow from the public health infrastructure framework here of the social ecologic model, and acknowledge that behavior is affected by multiple levels of influence. And when we translate this into Y talk, this is what it looks like, where the Ys are looking to impact individuals, families, organizations, communities, and society, and along that continuum, but also along a prevention continuum as well. So from primary through secondary and tertiary prevention. And our CTG work really fits a big chunk of this continuum around impacting organizations, communities, and working along primary and secondary prevention. So specifically, under the umbrella of the community transformation work, the grantees are working on four core areas. The first was to implement healthy eating and physical activity standards and childcare programs across the community. So in Y locations, in non-Y locations, just so we're creating that supportive environment for kids in the community. Another was to expand the reach of the YMCA's diabetes prevention program. Sherry mentioned it a bit. It's an evidence-based program to reduce the risk of diabetes in those who are at high risk. The third, and what I'm going to really focus on in this talk, is around the coordination of those systems and efforts, prevention efforts, between the clinical-based providers and the community-based organizations. Finally, the grantees are also looking to foster community changes that would create more equitable communities. And like I mentioned before, this was very focused. So our grantees were working in majority Hispanic, Latino, and African American communities. And like I mentioned, I'm going to be focusing on these linkages. So when we talk about leveraging systems of support, we're really talking about how do we create that community where no matter where that individual goes, that they're being supportive in their health and well-being goals. So if you leave the clinic setting and you've had 15 minutes with your provider, when you go out the door, we want to still support that health journey, and what better than to engage other community partners in that effort. And so for us, in the context of community transformation grants, it was really around systems. And so I'm going to read the definition here. A system is a collection of components that interact with each other to function as a whole. So it's often sometimes seen as a closed system. There's some inner workings. And so when we look to make systems change, it gets a little more complicated. So system change involves shifting components or their sequence or interaction, and that can take a lot of work. And this picture I chose purposely, it looks a little intimidating. So from a community-based organization standpoint, working with providers of the medical community can be intimidating. We often speak different language, we have different training, we are financed differently, different processes, and different structure. So when our grantees were, you know, tasked with creating community-to-clinic linkages, as a national organization, we wanted to help support them in this effort, and so we had created a tool that was more tactical called the Clinic-to-Community Assessment, that they could do in collaboration with their clinical partners. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the assessment, some findings from its use, and then some of the solutions that the grantees were able to come up with. So our Clinic-to-Community Assessment really inventories supportive policies and practices for healthcare providers. So what are those preventive practices that can be in place in different medical settings? It also identifies opportunities to enhance these linkages and referral opportunities between clinical settings and community-based organizations. And finally, but probably most importantly, it really enables these clinic and community different stakeholders to prioritize and to create an action plan to help establish the goals of this assessment. So what this looks like on the ground is really it's a facilitated discussion. Folks are coming around the table from both of those stakeholder groups and answering questions such as, does the organization work with community-based organizations to help their patients prevent chronic disease? The assessment, Sharon, it can be quite lengthy, and we'll get into that in a second, but it just asks some good prompting questions to start to think about what do we have in place, what are some of the strengths, and what are some of those gaps that we could work together to fill. And we're doing this to better prevent and manage chronic disease in these communities. So about 26 of the assessments were completed by our grantees, and the majority of them were in healthcare organizations that were operating in pretty resource-scarce environments. So the majority were either in federally qualified health centers or community clinics, but there's a bit of a range here. And only 1 in 4 reported that they were currently addressing the need for chronic disease referrals to community-based organizations. So I think obviously opportunity there to increase that referral system. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our findings, the good, the bad, and then the interesting. I didn't want to go to the ugly. So the good, the assessment definitely helped start conversations and to start to create relationships and trust between these two different sectors. It helped bridge some knowledge gaps between clinics and community-based organizations. So what I really found interesting was that the community-based organizations were like, oh, now I understand why it's not that easy for them to refer, or I understand that they have these other constraints, like the meaningful use to worry about. And so it really helped to bridge that knowledge gap. So the clinic to community assessment was pretty broad in focus and scope, and it covered many preventive topics, which was seen by some as being good. Interestingly, it was also an eye-opener for the clinicians in these different settings. So when they were hearing what their fellow clinicians were doing when they're approaching preventive services and referrals, it was never the same. Folks were doing different ways of doing things, so they were learning from each other. And then it also helped identify prevention champions within these clinics that could be leveraged later for other work in the community. So some of the bad, and I don't like the word because we're a very asset-based organization, but due to the scope that I mentioned, it was a pretty broad scope, it took a very long time, and that was tough. So in the future iterations, we kind of broke it up a little bit so it didn't seem so much of a heavy lift that first time. Overall, especially the clinicians that were part of these processes of the assessment, they were very pressed for time, not just in doing the assessment, but across the board, not surprisingly. The clinics also had limited time and resources to establish connections, so a lot of that legwork that you guys were doing, they couldn't, you know, they needed help to figure out what those connections should be. And then some, unfortunately, I think to the kind of the group here, some clinical providers were very skeptical that prevention would ever work. And so that's somewhat of an uphill battle that we have to work on. So some of the interesting, it was very helpful in this facilitated discussion to have the community-based organization or someone from that community coalition actually have some clinical background. Just knowing some of the terminology and knowing what those barriers were, that was helpful in having that person lead the assessment. And then also, finally, around interesting, those who were involved from the clinic sites varied whether they were very administrative in function or clinical in function, and kind of depending on who was the makeup from that healthcare clinic or system, it made a difference in what the solutions were and what they were able to work on as a group. So this is one of the quotes from someone who's participating. I think it helped to start conversation. It opened doors. I don't know if there would be any other way of reaching folks other than this kind of assessment or survey. So this was someone who was on the team, the coalition team, and really found it useful in starting that conversation. So when we talk about solutions, some of the solutions that the different grantees came up with, and it kind of came out of its use, some were really great. And I would say they're along a continuum, kind of depending on the sophistication of the different healthcare system or the clinic and what they had in place really drove some of these solutions. So in one clinic, they were able to add a specific diagnosis code to their EHR, so they were along kind of a path where they were able to make changes and facilitate adding diagnosis codes. Another was implementing referral prompts within the EHR based on some algorithm of risk factors or diagnoses. Some did a little more low-tech. We had one or two grantees who provided just physical postcards that the patient would then fill out and send, and it would go to a community-based organization, so then the community-based organization would be the one who's calling to follow up on that referral. So it took the kind of onus out of the clinical system and put it more on the patient and the community-based organization. Some of the clinical settings established manual but regular review of paper medical charts to figure out who they could do some outreach and follow-up to. And then another grantee was able to build referral system. They build referral systems off the local health department doing some screening and kind of created a partnership there. So all really exciting stuff. And I think this quote I really was happy with. She said, we've created a referral system with them. And that's pretty much our biggest accomplishment because of the sustainability. It's sustainable because its continuation has nothing to do with the grant. And I think when we talk, I mean, it's hard to do systems change, but this is why we work on it. So it does stay when the grant funding ends. And so I thought that this, and it's nice to have our community-based organizations and even the Y folks start to understand that this is a change. System change is more sustainable. And so I guess in closing, so if you're a community-based organization, know that some folks has had success in creating some linkages with clinic partners. It's not that scary. You know, there's tools out there to help that process along. If you're a healthcare provider, know that there's community-based organizations in your community who really want to work with you and are looking to help support the patient population that you serve. If you're a patient, know that both healthcare providers and community-based organizations really do have your health at the top of their mind, and they are trying to work together to better your journey. And then if you're a funder or a grantor, I'd say know that tactical resources really do help in having your grantees take the first step in this journey. I mentioned it can be a little intimidating, but with some tools and resources that national organizations or other funders can provide does help in that. And then finally, if you're interested in connecting further, I did upload a handout on the community to clinic assessment, and then my contact information is here as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank you for going through that so quickly. It left quite a bit of time for questions and answers, so I'm going to open the floor for questions. Before I do that, I want to encourage you all to please fill out your evaluation forms, and then Adrian is in the back collecting them before you leave, so please make sure you hand them in. We also have created this guide to community transformation, so if you still haven't quite figured out what you're going to do for the rest of the Tuesday and Wednesday where you're going to go. This highlights sessions around healthy eating, active living, systems transformation, tobacco control, policy changes. So all of the sessions that are in that big, thick guide have been pulled out that will lead you to the community transformation type sessions. And that's up here. So before you leave, grab that. And the only thing that I'd like to add is when you're thinking about your leadership team and the people that you need at the table to make sure that you really do have true cross-sectoral collaboration, always ask yourself who's not at the table. Just continue to ask yourself who's not here and invite those people. The more people at the table, the more you can accomplish. So with that, I'm going to open the floor for questions for all of these wonderful speakers. Questions, yes.
There's not officially one point of contact. I would say Sydney.
She's not claiming it.
I've been there 3 months. They haven't told me that before. So what we're doing is it's a little bit more informal, though. I wouldn't call it a formal coordination in a sense. It's more those bi-monthly calls. So I often send out the email. We pick the time. We try to find a good time that most people can join us. Try to keep that up. We have a communications person, and we had it vacant for a little while, so the new person is going to be starting soon. Same thing, it'll be talking to them about how do we reincorporate all of the different messages, how do we get out there and help support it. And then we also have the way the Department of Washington, Department of Health is set up, is this, a lot of our funding goes out to the local health jurisdictions through these hubs, and then each hub is responsible for the counties in their region. And that model is working well because they're also getting funding from some other different grants, and they're able to look at community-wide activities, and they're able to look at what is CCG-related and what are some of the other things they can be doing and when they can use those, leverage those resources. So I don't supervise in any way, but I do coordinate with that team in the sense that we have bi-weekly meetings, and we're internally at Department of Health trying to find out what's going on across the state, and then so we have two different avenues. One is statewide, what are we doing? And then also statewide CTG, what are we doing? So kind of balancing those two.
Yes.
I was wondering about criteria used to define evidence-based community programs. You know, we've been talking about encouraging clinicians to refer patients to community-based programs, but I know we don't want to just refer to anything. Mm-hmm. So what's being used for
finding what are evidence-based community programs, and how is there a vetting of what you load into the database or community referral? So for us, we take a look at the community guide, and that has a list of evidence-based programs, and if it's an A or a B, is generally what we advocate for. We also really use the lead from CDC of what they're recommending and funding, or if it's HRSA or whichever department, and that what they're trying to promote to go statewide, and they generally have they use the same criteria with the community guide as well.
If you're unfamiliar with the community guide, if you Google CDC community guide, you can find it. So. Any other questions? Yes.
Tim Hughes with Trust for America's Health. Just wanted to know, if your efforts, have there been any effort on your part to educate your elected officials to tell them about the work you're doing?
We're leaving that to you, Tim.
Knows we have a congressional briefing scheduled for November the 13th to educate our elected officials about the work that we're doing. So, and we've had some of our other, there's six Reach MNO funded organizations, and they have had congressional briefings similar to this one. But this will be the first one that we have all six of us to collectively together during the briefing. So.
And I was going to say, I think we have quarterly newsletters that go out just to general public. So of course they're welcome to look at that. And also through our normal relationship, I think the official title, we also have folks from the governor's office that are part of the leadership team.
We've also been working with our leadership team and my director of health in his non-CTD capacity. He meets regularly with decision makers, and so I keep him updated through that.
Right. I will also say that we have a partnership with NCSL, and we're working with Prevention Institute to educate local elected officials. So we're working, and we will work with Sue.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So we're also, we've been asked by our local public health department not to send out like our blanket newsletter to our local electeds. They said that they just don't want us to do that because that's too much information. They'll ignore it. And so right now, what we're trying to do again for Seattle is we have met with one staffer from one of our local, one of our House representatives by request. They requested to meet with us to say, hey, we know we have CTG in our, we said that we have CTG in our community, what's happening? We have another one coming up that our PIs will go and meet with them to tell them about the work. But we're also working on right now, I don't know whether the other CTG communities in here looked at the CDC's success stories template. Is really huge and not, for us, we can't really use that template until the end of the project because they're really about what's your end success. So what we've decided to do is do short, kind of on-demand success snippets. Like, we can't really use that template until the end of the project because they're really about what's your end success. We want 1 to 2 a month, send them out to all of our stakeholders, and then targeted to the delegation folks that would actually be interested in it. And we want to kind of keep that in touch. But if you have your
I'd like to say please send those snippets to me so that I can get stories out in Public Health Newswire and Nation's Health and highlight them in webinars, and we also share them with TIFA so that they then get shared in their newsletter, in Rich Hamburg's newsletter that goes out, and they also get shared in briefings and things like that. So please. So
I'd also like to say that the success stories are really important, and we do the same thing. We don't do it necessarily through CTG, but through SHIFT. And so on our website, we have success stories for the different topics. So it's on there. And we have to provide an annual legislative report about SHIFT activities, and then now CTG, some of our successes will be put into that report as well. And we also do training for communication to our grantees.
Great.
So I think that's really important so that they can start thinking about how to get the word out in their communities.
That's great. Question back here?
Yeah, just really quickly, what is the promotion they can for sort of happening next week, which is I'm Matthew with Public Health Institute, and next week we're pleased with support of APHA with the CTG project funding, along with the National Business Coalition on Health. PHI is hosting a web forum called Prevention Means Business, and it's highlighting the work that's going on around the country to promote community prevention around businesses as well as on the website. So how employers are promoting community environmental policy changes for their employees in their homes and communities and neighborhoods. And also wanted to echo what Tim said around echoing and highlighting the work that CTG is doing in communities, because it is a requirement of CTG grant to educate your congressional representatives as the funders of this work. Because although CDC is the conduit of the money, it's actually the Congress, obviously, which is the funder of community transformation plans. Really. So that's so important.
Matthew, would you like them to send you the success stories too? Because Matthew does a lot of this work as well. Yeah, okay.
And Sean will be a speaker on our web forum.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
Living in tobacco-free are another specialty, and in rural communities,
We've been able to have contractors to help us so that they're up and out, using more webinar and conference calls. So, like, for example, I'm focused on the clinical community, and most of them, that's not their expertise. And so to provide orientation and to provide the, I have monthly conference calls that we are, everybody comes call, is on the call, it's well attended, and we have time to share so that then there's learning peer-to-peer. But providing the orientation is really important. And then I'm available, so if they call, I'll call back and then talk with you. I think somebody had mentioned that, with having a community person or local public health, just having a little bit of that healthcare background, I've noticed that for the ones that do, then they catch on a lot easier, but they're able then to really help support the other ones as well.
I will say we have two more sessions today. One's focusing on Indian country. That's the very next session after this. And then the other one starts at 2:30, and that has a session that's really focused on rural communities and the use of joint use agreements, if you're interested in really rural situations. We have time for, I think, maybe one more question.
I just wanted to add to that. In Millen, Georgia, where there's only one hospital, which is private, and three physicians, one of the things that they had to do to try to bring healthcare to the area is they found a person who's like 45 minutes to an hour away. She's a certified diabetes educator, and they worked with her collectively, and she wrote a small little grant, and she got a grant to come to Millen, Georgia to do the work, because otherwise the residents have to go drive 45 minutes to an hour just to get, because they don't go to the local doctor, they don't trust them, and they don't go to the local hospital, all of those things. And so really just trying to find a healthcare provider who's interested and committed and willing to work collectively with you to bring more resources to an underserved area, and that has been effective.
And in rural North Carolina, we have to refer to state resources and national resources. But something that works well to deal with that distrust is you create a story of success, a movie, or in rural communities, like a couple quotes about a picture of the person they probably know.
Wow. One more question. With that, thank you for coming. I hope you enjoy the rest of your conference. Thank you, speakers. Thank you.